You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Since the dawn of our existence, humans have had a deep yet complicated relationship with one of Earth's essential yet volatile elements, fire. Fire has played a critical role in our evolution as a species, and indigenous communities have embraced it for both practical and cultural purposes. But in the last century or so, our relationship with fire has fallen out of balance and became viewed overwhelmingly as a destructive force. Today, fires in California are largely associated with increasingly lethal and destructive wildfires. Those wildfires have not only destroyed homes and claimed lives, but have left traumatic experiences in their aftermath. A new children's book is hoping to help kids and their families reimagine fire as a key part of life on our planet. The book is titled Fire Shapes the World. I spoke with the book's author, Joanna Cook, who hopes the book can help humans reestablish a balanced relationship with fire. Well, Joanna, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really happy to be here.
You know, often when we write, we're shaped by lived experiences. When did your understanding and your relationship with fire begin?
I would say that my relationship with fire began, or the first time I ever really considered it as an entity or as a thing to be thinking about, was when I worked in Yosemite as a field science educator and naturalist. And that was the first time that I both interacted with it in the landscape. I saw indigenous burns. I saw preventative burns happening through the National Park Service. And I was also in a position where, as an educator, I was trying to translate what was happening or what we could see on a fire burn landscape to young people when they came to the park. So that's when I first really thought about it. And then I had to figure out what I was going to say about it.
You spent nearly a decade teaching field science at Yosemite. How did you make the pivot, I guess, or how did this influence leading to pursuing another passion of yours, creative writing?
I think probably, even when I was in Yosemite, I did a lot of nature journaling and trying to process my experience of that place through writing. And that's always been a part of my journey. But after I moved to, I live in Jackson, Wyoming now, and after I moved here, I just was reinventing myself. I was having a child. I knew I wasn't doing field education anymore or working for the Park Service anymore. And I started writing stories for friends. And at that point, I thought, well, this is a really interesting way to, you know, education and the work I was doing in Yosemite is a form of storytelling. And so now I'm just doing a different manifestation of that. And that it was fun to play around with, and I thought I would want to do it more seriously. So I started pursuing workshops and conferences and seeing what that felt like.
What's special writing for children and youth?
My relationship with nature is so based in wonder and curiosity. And young minds, that's exactly how we would describe a young mind. Full of wonder, full of questions, and full of amazement. And that's what I, as an educator, that's what I tried to communicate with kids when they came to Yosemite National Park. How do you translate nature into something that's meaningful to us? How do you translate this beauty? How do you ask questions to understand it more or to see yourself as connected with that more? And so for me, it's that sense of wonder and curiosity. I really love trying to puzzle around. How do you relate? How do you make this big topic accessible to these young minds?
I think when it comes to fire or wildfire, there's so much that adults can learn, right? There's so much that, and even when it comes to this book, I mean, it's targeted for youth and children, but I learned something from Fire Shapes the World. Mm-hmm. And this is your third book. What motivated you to explore our relationship with fire and how it can improve?
So this book was my third that I published in conjunction with or through the Yosemite Conservancy, The Sequoia Lives On being the first, also a nonfiction picture book with a very similar lyrical style. And when we were working on that book, there's a spread where it discusses the way that that low burning forest fires are an important part of the ecology and survival of giant sequoia trees. And we were all really inspired by that concept and that idea and thought, well, that would be an interesting book to do, to work on another time. NYC Yosemite Conservancy had given me kind of like, well, these are sort of things we're interested in exploring for young readers. And I picked out fire, and it took a number of years before I was able to even put something on the page. I spent a lot of time mulling the idea and thinking about the angle that I would want to take and what I would really try to say. But that's where it came from.
I learned that fire has a birthday.
Yes. I think that particular fact was one thing that really hooked Yosemite Conservancy when I was pitching the actual manuscript to them. And so if you look back in time, that we know from the fossil record that about 420 million years ago is the first fossil fire evidence that scientists have discovered. Who knows what future discoveries will share with us. But when we think back to Earth hundreds of millions of years ago, there weren't plants on land. So there was nothing for a fire to burn anyway. And fire is dependent upon oxygen. And so if there were no plants that were emitting oxygen into the air, there was none of that sort of food, as we might say, for a fire to even start. There were no plants and there was no oxygen. So it needs this whole package. And when those conditions shifted on Earth hundreds of millions of years ago, then it was possible for fires to burn.
More than 400 million years ago is kind of a relative blip, you know, given that Earth is 4.5 billion years old, right? So it took a while to get here. How has our understanding and our relationship with fire evolved as we evolved as a species?
Well, when you think about paleoarchaeology and looking back at human history and hominid history, I suppose, fire has always been a part of the landscape that we've evolved with and in various forms. And so the idea that we evolved with fire on the landscape, whether or not we were directly manipulating it, comes later, but it's always been a part of the world that we evolved in. Like in the book, there's a spread of a group of paleo peoples surrounded by a fire or surrounded the fire. And this light draws people in. It's enigmatic. It was a way in which communities came together. And also we understand the way that food, that we changed the way that the type of food that we were eating through fire. And so these like drawing together, this access to different food, these were the first initial kind of shifts that were changing the way fire changed us as individuals or as a species. And then we start to manipulate fire by carrying it into environments where maybe it wasn't that, so that because we've now developed communities and systems around it. And so it's been this kind of ebb and flow back and forth. And so when we think about the way in which traditional or indigenous knowledge is informing how we understand fire today, that's the sort of modern manifestation of this really, really long relationship with fire. Around a couple of hundred years ago, a Western mindset decided that fire wasn't appropriate for the landscape, that it was destructive. And so that marked a really big shift in this more dynamic, symbiotic relationship, maybe. And that resulted in the fires that we're seeing today, by and large, in which if you think that fire is bad for the landscape and you put out fires, then it results in more fuel on the ground for a fire to burn. So we get these bigger megafires. And now that those megafires have been shaped the way, we'll say, lay people are interacting with the idea of fire or the reality of fire in their communities. And hopefully now what's happening in the way that we are continuing to grow and evolve with fire is that we're inviting. And there's a big, I would say, movement in the news and in fire communities to really not only include, but to really highlight this indigenous knowledge so that we can find some balance as we move forward.
We've had those conversations on Insight as well. I mean, it's a neglected piece in modern wildfire strategies over the last century or two, using, you know, good fire and having a healthy relationship with fire and wildfire and getting, you know, arguably too good at fire suppression. And now we have mega wildfires that are incredibly destructive and deadly. And that really encapsulates really the core of this, which is our relationship with fire. Fire can be destructive, it can be deadly, but it also has been really an asset to our evolution as a human species. Mm-hmm. And you tie that with these beautiful illustrations, including the cover, right? It's it's a complicated relationship with fire, and humans are at the center of it. How did you work with illustrators to put these ideas and this history and this science and really bring it to life?
One of the benefits of working with a smaller publisher such as Yosemite Conservancy is that the author is very, or has the opportunity to be very involved in the entire creation of the book. Normally, as an author, I would be responsible for the text and text edits, working with an editor. But in this case, YC definitely invited me to be engaged. We found an illustrator. The first illustrator we worked with was Cornelia Lee. She read the text and she did extensive research. You know, the book covers 420 million years. That's huge in terms of
in a very
the
digestible way, too, you know, for,
yeah,
for children to understand.
Right. Well, I think that that was a, you know, having written the text, I knew that it was going to span this time. But then there's this leap of faith that you make when you collaborate with an illustrator of what's their vision going to be? And is their vision of the text going to jive with what I've envisioned for the text? And how do we modify that? How do we grow then together as we collaborate? So she did an incredible amount of research, and there was a lot of back and forth with facilitated through the editor that I worked with at Yosemite Conservancy toward figuring out what exactly we wanted to include. And did she have the right sources to find out about which plants would be on Earth at this particular time period? So it's really a very interesting and somewhat, well, for me, it was a somewhat unusual collaboration. I'd not done that before. I think it's not as uncommon as we might think in the publishing world to have people step in and out of projects. But there was definitely a lot of back and forth into what we thought the illustrations would, which illustrations would best illuminate the points we were trying to make.
A piece of this in recent years, there are, you know, harmful consequences to wildfires across the Western United States and also in other countries as well. And a piece of that is trauma. So when we talk about wildfires now or fire, you know, it's a difficult topic. And last September, we spoke with a reporter from Kaiser Health News, and they really dove deep into how trauma and chronic health issues impacts tens of thousands of children in California. Given that this is a book for a younger audience, how did this shape your approach to writing and educating about fire and wildfires, you know, given that it's a difficult topic?
When you write about any time an author or any storyteller is going to decide on a topic, they really need to name who their audience is going to be. And my editor, Nicole Geiger, and I had a conversation specifically at the very beginning during this sort of long marinating period when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to say. What we talked a lot about who the audience was really going to be. And we felt very clearly from the beginning that this was for a much broader audience rather than for specifically people who had experienced trauma due to wildfire in their lives. And the reason for that was that we really felt that that would be a completely different book. That would be a book that honored the trauma of their experience and the feelings and the grieving that would go with that. And so for this book, we wanted to zone out a little bit to think about a complex topic and see if we could find a way to provide, I'm a yes and kind of person. We wanted this to be a yes and. Yes, there's this destructive force that we see in our lives and in our landscape, and we hear it about in the news. And let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's look a little bit more closely to see what else might be there. And for young people, the world is pretty concrete, and we train them to do that from the beginning. Small, you know, picture books for young minds are about, you know, up and down and good and bad and dog and cat, or opposites. We have these opposites. And that's really important when concrete minds are developing. And when you want to get into a space of talking about nuance, we have to create that opportunity for young people. It's not going to happen naturally necessarily to them. And as you go through life, and you get older and older, you get more and more nuanced because you experience the grayness of life. And so for this, I think for me, zooming out to think about this real big picture, I had originally started writing the story with a single character in mind. And we were going to follow this character on the journey of losing a home and the emotions that went with that. And I realized that wasn't quite what I wanted to say or what was interesting for me. It's an important story to tell, and all of those experiences are absolutely valid, but I wanted to zone back to that wonder and curiosity that really framed my experience as a young person and then as an early educator for people in establishing a connection to nature. So I think about like that, using a lyrical style of writing the picture book was one key for making that possible, versus an expository style of writing, which would be more journalistic, for example, where you would be getting facts and information. I wanted to go to an emotional place, and having a more poetic, free-form narrative was what was going to help me get there.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with author Joanna Cook about her children's book, Fire Shapes the World, and how humans can reestablish a better relationship with fire. Okay, since you are a yes and kind of person, and there is obviously optimism attached to this book, what gives you optimism that humans, that society, and fire can find balance and harmony?
When I think about optimism for the future, I think about some of these leaders in the environmental movement or in the natural history movement. I think about David Attenborough and I think about Jane Goodall. These are two people who shaped my understanding and relationship with nature. And those are two incredibly hopeful individuals. They're like souls are exuding that. And knowing that what they have seen and what they've been exposed to and the depth of understanding that they have about the challenges that we have ahead of us, and yet they are still hopeful, like that's an inspiration to step into it, step into that space of being hopeful. And I also feel like the idea that there are always new ideas and new minds and new players in this conversation about where we're going to go as humanity and where we're going to go with how we're engaging with nature and with Earth, that's inspiring to me, that we will always have an opportunity for people to push the conversation further, to look at it, to shine a light on it from a different perspective, that continual like renewal around it is what keeps that hope alive for me.
Is there anything that kind of keeps you up at night when it comes to concerns or worries in terms of the challenges of reimagining our relationship with fire?
Oh, sure. I have a 14-year-old son. And so I think about the world which we have created for him. We were recently watching the biography of David Attenborough that was available, and he couldn't watch it anymore. He wanted to stop because David Attenborough got real. The world is real. And it was too much emotion because it was too big. And so I feel like that is a terrifying idea. What is the world that we've created for children? And knowing that I have options. Every time you get to your crossroad, you have an option. I can either not do something or I can find a way that I want to engage that feels authentic to me. So engaging with the storytelling, engaging with young minds when they're developing their concepts and opinions and ideas, or even just gathering information so that when they develop an opinion later on, they have perspectives that will help them see things and more completely. The yes, they'll see the yes and the and. that's my choice. I have to choose that. I have to choose yes and.
Do you have an age range in mind for the reader?
We wrote this for 5 to 8-year-olds, and you'll see in the back that there's a lot of nonfiction these days has a back matter or an author's note that goes a little bit deeper. So by and large, the text is for 5 to 8-year-olds. And then this back matter goes deeper into the concepts. It's written for an adult reader who can then help translate some of these bigger concepts to their own, whoever they're reading to.
I appreciated that author's note. I learned a great deal. So I think it's certainly an important tool. You also have a teaching guide for those who are interested in utilizing this book in the classroom. How would you like it to be integrated in an educational setting?
Well, the teaching guide is based on the Common Core curriculum and the Next Generation Science Standards. So there, you will see a lot from both the literacy standpoint and from the ecology standpoint, activities and exercises that will meet the needs of your classroom. But I feel like for me that I've taught in elementary schools, my husband is a second grade teacher. So this idea of how to integrate it in the classroom is always on my mind because I want it to be usable. I feel like anytime we engage students with reading something and we're thinking about, you could analyze it from the perspective of how we talk about nonfiction text. What is nonfiction text and what are all the different ways that it can exist in a classroom? How does nonfiction inform us and inspire emotional response at us too in a way that we might normally expect from fiction? So what do we do with that? A lot of great discussions can happen from this. You might encourage them to think about, like for second grade standards, for example, you talk about fast and slow changes on the earth, and you can use this as a starting point for conversations because fire is going to bring a fast change through a megafire or a slow change through either a burn or if you're talking about geologic time. And so using text like this as a jumping off point for some of the bigger conversations you're having as a class, or if you're thinking about just perspectives, you're thinking about the world, there's a lot that you could do with it.
What is the lasting impression you hope this book has on families and children?
I hope that they look at the world and specifically fire with wonder and curiosity.
And this book, I got to mention this, it will also help support Yosemite National Park, right? Since it's a partnership with the Conservancy?
Yes, yes. All the proceeds will end up supporting the projects that Yosemite Conservancy does to support a stewardship and a connection in the park.
Wonderful. Joanna, it was great speaking with you. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me.
And that is Joanna Cook, author of the children's book, Fire Shapes the World, to help kids and their families reimagine fire as a part of life instead of just a destructive force. The book comes out next week and is available for pre-order. All proceeds go to the Yosemite Conservancy. Still ahead, we have another edition of Concert Connect, hooking you up with live music in Northern California. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.